with 21 correspondents in 7 countries from around the world. This is Bondi Tunes International.
You're listening to Bondi Tunes International, broadcasting around the world. I'm Henry on Bondi Beach in Sydney, Australia. Adam Devlin is our Australian political correspondent, and he joins me from the beautiful beach of St Kilda in Melbourne, where he's currently living. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Henry. Hello, listener.
I see that you're on the beach today.
Yes.
St Kilda, of course, is kind of like the Bondi, as we mentioned last week. It's like the Bondi of Melbourne, except it's got lots of prostitutes. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. More prostitutes and less surf.
Okay, well, we got a lot to talk about, Adam.
Make of that what you will, but yeah.
Yes, okay.
No, I'm beautiful across beach, it. But it doesn't have a lot of surf.
Okay, fair enough. But you're not a surfer, and neither am I. So do we care? Do we?
No.
No, we just don't care. I'll tell you someone I do care about, Matt.
Although
Damon.
I do miss seeing thin boys in bodysuits.
Yeah, okay. I don't miss that. But look, I want to talk about Matt Damon. I have a lot of time for this actor. I think he's a very genuine person. He's a brilliant actor, of course, but I've seen him interviewed over the years, and he is a genuine nice guy, isn't he?
Yeah, he certainly comes across that way. Every interview I've seen him do, everything I've seen about him, has always says what a nice, genuine person he is. And he's been scandal free. Like, I can't really think of any major scandals that have associated.
I think he's got three kids or something. Another interesting point is that Ben Affleck and Matt Damon have known each other since childhood. They're best friends.
Yeah, and of course they wrote Good Will Hunting together.
Indeed, at a very young age.
Yeah, and won the Academy Award for it. And they've made several films together as producers and writers, and they've acted as well together. Their friendship, I think, is, BFFs.
Yes. I never know what that means. What does that mean?
Best friends forever.
Is that really? I never knew that after all these years. Now, you sent me a link, which I had not actually read. There's been so much going on here. He's got a private Instagram account. How does that work?
Well, it's funny. You sent me a story as we were planning for our chat today, and you sent me something which we're going to talk about a little bit later on.
Yeah, after this.
After this, yeah. And it reminded me of this article that I read the other day where and I just want to start by saying, I have always said that if I ever ended up famous in some way or in the public eye, I doubt very much that I would have social media, or if I did, I wouldn't have any comments turned on for them.
Yeah.
Just because of the absolute idiots that are out there. Mm. But Matt Damon has this Instagram account that only has 76 followers. He's only told, like, it's only his closest friends that know about this account. Mm. And it's his way of being in contact with family and friends around the world, without it being public and without all of the stupid idiots and fans in there as well. Mm. Now, it's just an Instagram account. It's just that he hadn't told anyone what it was called before.
Interestingly, just sorry to interrupt you, Twitter has this little green tick behind superstars to say that they're kosher, that the real thing. Does Instagram actually show that, or is it just a private group that just no one can jump in on?
Well, you can have a verified account. A lot of celebrities have verified accounts on Instagram, and they have an indication there to say that that's the real person. And I think he even has one of those public pages. Mm. But this is just a private one. I mean, if you know what it's called, you can follow it, or, you can request to follow it, and he'll deny it because he doesn't want anyone on there other than who he chooses.
That's great.
Which is fantastic. And, I think it's the way for people in the public eye to do social media. Mm. I think it's really clever. I think it's, he's... now, if someone's come across this and it's out there now, what this is, but it's a private account, so you can go and look at it, but you won't see much because it's all private.
Yeah, this is kind of unique. I mean, stars on his level, I've never heard of that before, where they can do this. So it's a brilliant idea.
Yeah. And he's had it for a very long time.
And did he just mention this? I'm just looking at the link you sent me on the Today Show on Channel 9 in Australia. I presume he mentioned it on that video, or...
Well, a woman discovered it.
Is that right?
Yeah, and so he was then asked about it, and he confirmed it. He said, yes, that's my private account, and, you know, I've got 76 followers on there. And he's done, what did he say? He said he's done 40 posts on there that he's posted since 2013.
Is that it?
So prolific isn't a word you would use to describe his private Instagram account, but no. You know, but as I said, you know, I just think it's great that he's come up with a way that he can just have an account for him and his friends and his family, and no one else. He can now post things about his kids and such that no one else gets to see.
And it's a beautiful thing. And as I said, I have a huge amount of respect for him. And he's done a new movie with his best mate, Ben Affleck, about McDonald's.
I don't know about this.
Okay, it's on the video somewhere. They've done a movie about McDonald's. I don't know what it's about, dear listener. You can just Google that. But, you know, I wish him the best. Now, we're talking about... Sorry about the motorbike passing my window. We're talking about bullying on Twitter, where journalists, broadcast journalists, are really getting hammered. Lee Sales is a top-rate broadcast journalist and fronts up 7:30, which used to be called the 7:30 Report on ABC's Channel 1. And she's written an article about this, and she really moved me by the way she wrote this article, because she's had enough. And many of her colleagues at the ABC have actually switched off their Twitter accounts. Have you read this article?
I did read the article. It's really interesting. And I'd heard a little bit about this before you sent me the article as well. Of course, Hamish McDonald, who used to host Q&A on the ABC, actually left the ABC because of this bullying.
Yeah.
And plenty of other people on the ABC have closed down their social media because of it. Now, it's all... Of course, there's this myth perpetrated by the far right-wing media in this country that the ABC is biased against conservatives, which you know has been investigated time and again, and every time that the regulators look at this, they find no evidence of bias at all.
It's like the BBC in the UK get the same kind of rap all the time,
And so a lot of you know these keyboard warriors, these far right wing keyboard warriors, just go on the attack with people in the ABC, and they say the most vile and disgusting things about them and call them the most hideous names and accuse them of the most unprofessional behaviour, when in actual fact the ABC is the most trusted media source in this country.
Yes.
And probably one of the most trusted in the world.
It intrigues me, you know, I wonder, do the media pressure their broadcasters? You know the way when you watch Channel 9, 10, 7, the commercial networks, or the ABC, you always see a strap line at the bottom, you know, let's say, Lee Sales at...
Absolutely. It's an important part of... Well, they see it as an important part of the marketing tool of the product.
I'm just wondering why the likes of her colleagues at the ABC, do they, you know, I think two of them have actually killed their Twitter accounts. I'm just wondering if there's pressure on these broadcasters to have this strap line at the bottom.
I'm sure there is, because it's on for everything now. And I'm assuming for those that don't have a Twitter account that there would still be that strap line there, that it would have just the official feed for that show that they're on.
Yeah. Do you think Twitter is so important in terrestrial broadcast media? Is it so important? I mean, Lee Sales did say in this report that she thinks that they should kind of be able to check these accounts to get the feel of what's going on in the world with people, but there's so much bad stuff on there.
Yeah, the thing with Twitter, the good thing about Twitter is that it's a very quick and easy way for people to share information. So news spreads incredibly quickly on Twitter.
Ask Donald Trump.
And that's why a lot of journalists use it, because it is, and it's a way of being in direct contact with your audience.
You've mentioned to me, to me when we were talking with, I think it was Melissa, our correspondent in Melbourne, who is somewhere in Queensland at the moment.
what I don't understand, Henry, is these people who are saying these vile things to these journalists. Mm. If you go and look at their Facebook pages, they're usually just normal people, married, jobs, kids. Mm. And it's like, if somebody was saying those things to your children, you would be appalled. You would be disgusted. Mm. And yet they feel fine. They feel it's okay to say it, to put it out there, as long as no one puts it back onto them or their family. I find, and that's one of the things I don't like about social media, is the fact that some people that use it seem to think that it gives them some sort of anonymity, or gives them some sort of right to just do and say things that they would never say to somebody's face.
Inside the lives of Bondi Tunes international correspondents, Adam Devlin.
I'm Adam Devlin. I was born in a small coastal town back in the 1960s and lived there until I was 18, when I moved to Sydney to go to uni. I came out as gay in the early 1990s and was one of the lucky ones, in that my friends and family had absolutely no issue with that. I've had a few careers over the years. I started out as a cook and then moved into corporate customer service. I'm also a writer and have had several poems published. I've won a playwriting competition and had several film scripts that I co-wrote produced. I also co-wrote and acted in a comedy drama series for ARTV, which was a bit of fun. I've also contributed to several books on pop culture, and I'm currently writing a book on the 1980s Hollywood musical Xanadu for BMNO Media. 10 years ago, my partner and I moved from Sydney to Melbourne, and that was the best move we've ever made. We love living in Melbourne. It has great restaurants, a thriving bar culture, and Australia's best art scene. We don't have any children, but we do have a 23-year-old cat called Stella and a 14-year-old dog, a Maltese cross, called Maddie. I'm one of those weirdos that lives for politics, and I've been blessed to have been Bondi Tunes' Australian political reporter for as long as there's been a Bondi Tunes, and I love doing it. I'm also passionate about music and have a vast music collection spanning almost every genre. And I also, from time to time, do a musical pick of the week for Bondi Tunes, where I'll discuss and then play some new music that I think is particularly good. For fun, I like to catch up with friends and watch old movies. We love to travel, and we've travelled to almost every continent, and hopefully we'll get to them all in the coming years. I love being on Bondi Tunes, as it's real radio with real stories from real people right around the world. You just never know what story is going to come up next. This is the Australian political correspondent, Adam Devlin, and I am Bondi Tunes.
Inside the lives of Bondi Tunes correspondents, Adam Devlin.
If you've just joined us, I'm Henry for Bondi Tunes International in Sydney, Australia, and I'm talking with our Australian political correspondent, Adam Devlin, in Melbourne. I mean, the thing is, these people are nameless and faceless, and they say these terrible things, and they say, look, as a journo, if you can't handle it, get off the air.
Yeah.
But it seems so unfair to me, because if it's not, let's say, Lee Sales, it's going to be someone else, isn't it? I mean, someone's got to do the broadcasting.
Absolutely. And, you know, as I said just a moment ago, I don't understand how people feel that they, because they're not saying it verbally to the person's face, that they feel they've got the right to express it in this way. Mm. And, you know, I just, you know, I personally regulate what I put online by saying, would I be happy to say this? What I'm about to post, if it's about somebody, would I be happy to go up and talk to them and say it to their face?
Yeah.
And if I'm not prepared to say it to their face, I don't post it.
And as you know, Adam, over the 12 years we've been broadcasting, we have many times asked people, at least I have, on social media, who have adverse reactions to our show or think that we're very left-wing, they say, well, come on the air. Come on the bloody air and talk about it. And they not only do they refuse, they don't refuse. They don't even answer.
No, they're gutless.
Keyboard warriors.
Yeah. You know, I've tried the whole time we've had this program, the whole time I've been on this program, which is the whole time the program has existed.
Yes.
I have tried and tried to get a right-wing conservative to come on and discuss politics with me. Mm. I've only found one person who would do that, which was Ben Willis,
who I remember
interviewed a couple of years ago.
He was
now
in politics, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. But I, you know, the offer is open. If any right-wing person wants to come on, right-wing conservative wants to come on and discuss politics with me on air, bring it on. I'm there. I'm respectful. I'm polite.
You know what? I find this interesting. We're being broadcast in North America and Canada. And, of course, we've got a correspondent in Texas. So we look forward to the Texas person saying, yeah, I'll go on the air.
Well, come on. I'm here.
Bring it
I'm
on,
waiting.
Baby. Okay, we're going to take a little break.
And you will be treated with respect.
Indeed.
Even though you're wrong.
That is... You've blown that one, Adam. No, in seriousness, we listen. We will listen. We always listen.
Absolutely.
Why don't I do a mini pick of the week, because you are living in St. Kilda for the best part of 2.5 more weeks, I think.
Well, there's news on that front.
Oh, please do tell.
We're thinking of extending our stay in this place.
Oh, pourquoi?
Although the apartment we're in is quite small, it's serviceable, it's comfortable, it's in a good location, it's affordable, and we just think that if we just move here, leave this place to go to some other Airbnb, it may not be as comfortable, it may not be as convenient, and it may not be as affordable.
Well, the thing is, as we mentioned earlier, St Kilda's a great little town, a beachside suburb, and why keep moving if you don't have to?
Yeah, you know, the hassle of moving, we've got more stuff than it'll fit in the car, so we'd have to have two places for at least a day so that we can transfer stuff between them. And you've got to be out of one by 10 in the morning and you can't get into the other until 2 in the afternoon. So, it's just a nightmare.
So what's the story on that front? Have you requested further time in St. Kilda?
We haven't fully decided yet what we're going to do. We're about 99% certain we'll extend this place.
And
so
will you be able to?
Yeah, we should be able to.
They haven't pre-booked or something.
The dates are available that we want it for. So,
okay. Now, we're going to take a break and do a mini pick of the week, as I mentioned. And Paul Kelly is very, very well known, a very well-known artist and writer, singer in Australia. And I just saw I picked the songs From St Kilda to King's Cross. Now, what do we know of Paul Kelly? Because if you're listening in Europe or America, you won't probably know him, would you?
Probably not. I think he has had some releases in the UK, but not that I don't know if he's had any hits or anything in the UK. But look, I have to say, I don't know much about Paul Kelly.
I just threw this at you at the last minute before we went to air because I just thought St Kilda to King's Cross is just brilliant.
No, it's great. He is one of our best songwriters. In this country that we've ever produced. He's got a very long career, very established career. The respect that this man has within the industry is mind-boggling. Like, just everybody adores this man. Everybody wants to sing his songs. There's been numerous albums of covers of his songs done over the years by Australia's very best singers. It's funny, I probably shouldn't say this, but... the thing I don't like about it is I don't like the way he sings.
Oh, okay.
Like, I don't mind his voice, but just the way his phrasing and stuff, I just can't warm to it for some reason. But I love his songs. I think lyrically he's amazing.
He really is a kind of institution. And, you know, he's been around for so long. I mean, this song that you're going to introduce to us is actually from 1985. So he has been around a long time, Adam.
He certainly has. In fact, when I was at school, he was touring when I was at school. And, you know, that wasn't yesterday.
Really? Okay.
But he had one. There is one particular song of his that I absolutely love. Actually, his first hit was in 1979. So that tells you how far back it goes.
Gosh, okay.
And I'm just trying to find the name of this song now.
And I just want to mention, with regard to From St Kilda to King's Cross, St Kilda, of course, is where you are. It's a very famous beach in Melbourne. King's Cross in Australia, in Sydney, not the King's Cross in London, is actually very similar to the King's Cross in London. We'll talk about that song in a minute. Did you find what you needed to find?
Some of his like Dumb Things was a huge hit for him in 1988. Don't Start Me Talking is another big hit of his. Last Train was massive hit for him and Christina Nu.
Yes.
How to Make Gravy is also a massive hit for him back in 1996. So
he just kept going. I mean, the album...
Oh, he's never stopped.
And that album... the album was called Post in 1985, just if anyone wants to Google that. I love the line, and you'll love this line too, Adam, because you lived in Sydney for 20 plus years. And he sings in this song, I give you all of Sydney Harbour, all that land and all that water for that one sweet promenade. And he's referencing, obviously, the promenade at St Kilda.
Yes.
And I'm thinking, yeah, he's definitely from Melbourne.
Yeah. Look, he's a poet. I mean, his stuff can be seen as poetry to me, as far as I'm concerned. Mm.
Someone actually mentioned...
And, of course, the other song I wanted to mention was To Her Door.
Oh, yes.
It was a massive hit.
Yes. And someone just wrote on YouTube that he's kind of like an Aussie Dylan. Isn't that interesting?
A little bit, yeah. Mm. I can see how people could think that. Yeah, absolutely.
Mm. So let's have a chat about this song, because I find it... I love the song. It's just like we all did these long bus trips that we hated. And this is where they got on a bus. What was it, 14 hours on the bus or something?
13 hours on a bus, it says, yep. Which would be, I've done long bus journeys like that when I was younger. I just couldn't do it now.
I often thought, why the hell didn't you just get a friggin' flight? You see, then there wouldn't be a song. And they were probably broke at the time, you know.
From St Kilda to King's Cross, it's 13 hours on a bus. I press my face against the glass and watch the white lines rushing past. And all around me felt like all inside me, and my body left me, and my soul went running. Have you ever seen King's Cross when the rain is falling soft? I came in on the evening bus from Oxford Street. I cut across, and if the rain don't fall too hard, everything shines just like a postcard. Everything goes on just the same. Fair weather friends are the loneliest friends. I keep my mouth well shut, I cross till open hands. Where the boundaries have it high, I give you all of Sydney Harbour, all that land and all that water for that one sweet promenade. I give you all of Sydney Harbour, all that land and all that water for that one sweet promenade.
So it would have either been, you know, a bus or hitchhiking.
Yes, I've done that. Have you ever hitchhiked?
I have.
Oh.
when I was like much younger, but yeah, not often.
Me too. I mean, I did some crazy stuff when I was 19. I had no money and hitchhiked from Dublin to Cork, which is right across the country, albeit a small country. It's funny how really, could you do that now?
I wouldn't do it now, no.
But if you were young.
Several times I've hitchhiked from Sydney to Eden, my hometown, from Sydney.
And that's a long way.
Which is like an 8-hour drive. And so once I managed to get a person who was going all the way down, so I just had the one vehicle. But another time I had three different trips, three different people drop me up off and pick me up. And it's
kind of funny because I was doing it in the late 70s and the early 80s. If I had a child who was like, 18 or whatever, which I don't, I'd be going, nah, you can't.
Well, not that you know of.
Thanks for that. Now you got me worried. I'm waiting for that phone call.
Yeah.
Hi, I'm your daughter. What about you?
Me?
No wandering children out there for you.
No.
Adam? Okay. No. The next election, Adam, what's going on? What have we got, 48-52, party on the Labour side?
Look, if an election were held last weekend, Labour would have had a resounding landslide win.
And they wouldn't have needed the Greens, even.
They wouldn't have needed the Greens, they wouldn't have needed anyone. They would have formed government, comfortable majority government in their own right. Now, the trouble is, we all know what Scott Morrison's like in an election campaign.
Mm-hmm.
Our current Prime Minister is a very good campaigner, hopeless politician, but he's a good campaigner. and so we have to just, the Labour Party are just terrified that come an election campaign, Albanese, who's not a good campaigner, up against Morrison, who is a good campaigner, even though the Labour Party's ahead in the polls, you know, they were heading the polls at the last election as well and lost it.
Yeah, that's a really interesting point, isn't it?
Yeah. So the Labour Party, there's a certain number of people in the Labour Party who are saying already, we need to have a change of leadership before this election.
And I just want to tie in, you've kind of tied in Christina Keneally with this. Wouldn't it be amazing if she actually rose to that level before the next election?
It would be good if she did, but it's impossible because she won't get into the lower house until the election.
Okay, and talking of the election and the dates, I mean, we did talk many times on this broadcast that there could be an election later this year, but given the figures and the polls, I don't think ScoMo, as he's regularly known in this country, is going to do it, is he, Adam?
I agree with you 100% on that. If you had have asked me before this current outbreak of COVID and before Morrison's vaccine stuff up, before all of that happened, I was convinced that there would be an election mid-October this year.
I just want to mention that the Prime Minister of Australia, Scott Morrison, is actually going to Washington early next week to have a chat for the first time with the President of the United States. I think, that's a nice little holiday for him since none of us can go anywhere.
Yeah, well, just we're safer with him out of the country, so goodbye.
As you said last time. And what about, we haven't talked since Father's Day. He flew from the capital city, Canberra, to Sydney to see his family on Father's Day. There was a bit of a hoo-ha over that, wasn't there?
Absolutely, and so there should have been. It's outrageous. I mean, he's our leader. He needs to set. He sets the example for the rest of the country. The rest of the country is in lockdown. People's family members are dying and people can't go to see them.
Yeah.
And yet somehow he gets an exemption just to fly to Sydney on a private jet that we pay for so he can have Father's Day with his wife and two children. I'm sorry. There's this thing called the Lodge in Canberra, which is the official Prime Minister's residence. His wife and kids should be living at the Lodge with him.
Yeah, why are they not?
And because John Howard, back in the 90s, we've got
previous
this...
Previous Prime Minister,
We have a place called Kirribilli House in Sydney, which is right opposite the Opera House. It's a...
Great views.
Beautiful big old mansion on manicured lawns, stunning uninterrupted harbour views of the Opera House, the bridge and the city of Sydney. multi-million dollar property. If it was ever to be sold, it would be one of the most expensive properties in Sydney.
Or in Australia, for that matter.
Yeah, if it was to be sold, you would easily be talking $70 to $90 million. What this property would be worth. Now, John Howard decided that his wife and sorry, this is the residence for the use of the Prime Minister.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So the Prime Minister has two houses. They've got the Lodge in Canberra, which is just around the corner from Parliament House. And then there's Kirribilli House in Sydney. Mm. Now, John Howard was the first Prime Minister to actually live at Kirribilli. And he did that because one of his sons, I think it was still at school in Sydney. And so he didn't want to disrupt his son's school. So he moved his wife and children into Kirribilli and himself. And he stayed at the Lodge when he was in Canberra.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Scott Morrison's doing the same thing. Mm. Why is it is beyond me. I mean, he could easily have moved his wife and children to Canberra. But he wants to live in Kirribilli. I get it. I mean, if I had the option to live in Kirribilli, I'd take it too.
With all those views.
With all those views and servants and everything you want at your fingertips.
To quote that song, all that land and all that water.
For him to fly to Sydney in a pandemic when everyone else is locked down just to see his kids, I can't fly to Brisbane at the moment to move into my house.
That's bizarre, isn't it? It just seems like...
So I'm stuck in a city where I don't have a house anymore. I'm homeless.
Yeah, and you're doing Airbnb.
Bobbing around from Airbnb to Airbnb.
Mm.
But he can fly to Sydney and back just to see his kids.
What concerns me about someone with so much power, and of course Scott Morrison, the Prime Minister of Australia, has the ultimate power in this country, is these nonsensical acts. And let's just talk about the bushfires a year and a half ago, where he went to Hawaii, was it, on holidays?
Yes, flew to Hawaii in the middle the whole eastern coast of Australia was on fire. Brisbane, New South Wales and Victoria, all on fire. Our worst bushfires in living memory, and he decided to have a holiday with his kids in Hawaii. And then when the government was asked about it, they lied and said, no, he's not in Hawaii on holiday.
They actually lied about it. I didn't know
that. Yeah, they did. And they said, well, where is he? We haven't seen him for days. And they said, oh, well, he's busy. And then the pressure mount. And then all of a sudden, Australians who were in Hawaii on holiday were having drinks with him. They saw the news, so they got photos and sent the photos back.
Otherwise, we'd never know.
Yeah.
Because he's using Air Force planes, so he wouldn't even know the details otherwise.
No. So, yeah, he's very good at... He's very arrogant.
Well, I was going to use that word, yeah.
His arrogance is off the charts, and he just feels that as Prime Minister he can do what he wants, and the rules that he inflicts on the rest of the country don't apply to him. I don't understand. So, and of course, with those fires.
Well, my question, Adam, was: I presume he's intelligent, but the arrogance seems to take over. I mean, it doesn't take a hugely smart person who's got his position a lot of thinking to think, "Hey, moving to Sydney to see my family on Father's Day would not be a good look." How could he have overseen that?
Because in his mind, he's a megalomaniac. In his mind, his thoughts are pure thoughts. His thoughts are right. Mm. And how could anyone question them? Mm. He doesn't. He lacks that ability to see the consequences of his actions from other people. And so
it's kind of a narcissist thing in a way.
Absolutely. He would have thought, oh my God, I really want to see my kids. My kids want to see me. Who could possibly begrudge me going to Sydney to see my kids? That would have been his thought process. Who could possibly begrudge me going to Hawaii in the middle of a national crisis? Mm. My kids are on holidays. They need a holiday. So, who would judge me badly for that? That's his Because he's the centre of the world. He's the centre of the world.
I don't get it.
Outside the rain begins, and it may never end. So cry no more on the shore, a dream will take us out to sea.
With 21 correspondents in 7 countries from around the world. This is Bondi Tunes International.
Bondi Tunes International broadcasting from Australia. I'm Henry on Bondi Beach in Sydney. And I've got our Australian political correspondent Adam Devlin in the beautiful St Kilda Beach in Melbourne. Adam, I just want to talk a little bit about our premiers. Now, if you're listening in Britain, you've got one set of people telling you everything because you don't have states. In America, if you're listening, we know you do have states, and God help the people in Florida and the people in Texas who are, are hardly allowed to wear masks, and we've got correspondents in both of those states. Here in Australia, the premiers are all screaming at each other, and the two biggest premiers are basically New South Wales and Victoria. And Gladys Berejiklian, the Premier of New South Wales, has said, I'm not going to do daily briefs anymore, live briefs, which last about an hour. What are your thoughts on that, since Danny down in Melbourne, who is the Premier, never stops?
He gives a press conference every day, and he stands there for as long as...
Unless he falls down some stairs.
Asking questions.
Yes.
Now... Gladys turns up, and as soon as she gets a question she doesn't like, she says, okay, that's all, thank you, and walks away.
Which and he never did. Said, He's never done
no,
that.
No. And now she's saying, well, you know, I'll turn up when I need to. Mm. It's like, what? No, we, you need particularly since this outbreak, I'm going to be blunt here, Henry, but this outbreak, which is now spread across four states in the country, is her fault.
And it started on Bondi Beach, actually.
She let it escape from Bondi into Western Sydney, and from Western Sydney it's just exploded into Queensland,
which for our listeners internationally, the west of Sydney, Sydney's huge, by the way, it's massive, much larger than London, even though it's not as big as populated as London. And once it hit the west, we're talking, my God, it just went, it was like wildfire, wasn't it?
Yeah, and so it has ended up in Queensland, the ACT, Victoria and South Australia, all because of her. And now she's not even prepared to come and stand up and defend herself and explain what's happening. I mean, the woman is just, it just to me looks like she's gone, oh, well, this is out of control now. There's nothing I can do. Yeah, why turn up?
I honestly have the same feeling. And she is part of a right-wing government. She's liberal on a state level. It's weird, though. On Monday, she actually did front the cameras. And I'm just wondering if someone said, Jesus, you better front the cameras because you just said you weren't going to do it anymore.
You know why she appeared on Monday?
Please tell me.
The opposition health spokesman put out a press release and said, well, since Gladys refuses to talk to the press at 11 a.m. on Monday, I will stand up and give a press conference at 11 a.m. on Monday and explain what is wrong with her reaction to this.
This is the state opposition leader, yeah?
Yes. State opposition health minister.
Health minister, okay.
So she had a choice. She could either not turn up and have all the press listen to Labor condemn her,
She was pushed into it.
Absolutely, because she knew if she turned up, the press would be following her. So she had to turn up. She was, she had no option. If she did not turn up and Labor health minister had been able to give his press conference, it would have been a complete disaster for her. So she's, and she stepped back a bit from it. She said, no, I didn't say there wouldn't be any more press conferences. Mm-hmm. It's just that I'll only hold them I've got actually something to tell you.
Mm. Another thing, sorry to interrupt you, another thing to mention is that she's met with 12 LGAs. Now, that's local government areas, I think areas, they're called.
Yep.
And the local politicians who lead those areas, and there's, as I said earlier on, the western suburbs of Sydney are huge. And there's 12 of them, but she met them four at a time and decided to have conversations with them, and they weren't very happy because on Sunday, here on Bondi Beach, where I live, there was footage on television of Bondi Beach absolutely packed. Now, if you're listening in Britain or Europe, you know Bondi Beach is, you've probably, if you've come to Australia, you know you've been on Bondi Beach. Sure, I think you would have been. And it's packed. And the people in the western suburbs of Sydney are going, they're in heavy lockdowns. And this must have been appalling for them to
police
watch on
controlling
television.
Paroling the street to make sure people and helicopters stay in their houses.
Helicopters in the sky at 2 in the morning when your children can't sleep.
Mm. And yet Bondi is...
Oh, nothing's going
COVID?
On here.
COVID? What COVID?
Nothing to see here.
Yeah.
Absolute disgrace.
It is absolutely... She has shown absolutely during this that she has one attitude for the eastern suburbs of Sydney, and she has a very different attitude towards the western suburbs of Sydney.
And the two things that come to mind here is that she's a liberal, so she's right-wing, and it's all about opening up the state because she's, money-focused.
Well, it's all about the economy.
The economy, of course, not, not people. And also the eastern suburbs is it's got a higher demographic of people who are educated and that kind of thing. Look, putting it, they're just richer people in the eastern suburbs.
Yeah.
And more educated, apparently.
I'll just remind you of what the Prime Minister said when she announced that she would be opening up when they hit 70% of adults vaccinated. Mm. And everybody said, but deaths will increase if you do this. Yeah. And the Prime Minister was asked about it. And the Prime Minister said, well, yes, there will be funerals, but at least you'll be able to attend them.
Oh, he didn't actually say that, did he?
He
inferred that is it, right?
That is a direct quote.
Oh, that is the worst thing you could possibly say. So, Adam,
there will be funerals, but you'll be able to attend.
Oh dear, we got to go soon.
Unless, well, of course, even if you did, you're still attending it, aren't you? So,
well, yeah. That's true. One extra person. Do they include the dead person as he might appear?
Yeah.
Oh God, this is getting nasty, isn't it? Just a question about Christmas, because I ask this every year. Can you believe it? I'm asking this every year now.
I know.
How do you think? I mean, I know you're moving to Queensland. If
I don't even know where I'll be at Christmas.
But do you think that people? Well, what do you think is going to happen at Christmas? Because with this, 80% target in the state of New South Wales, if we're all vaccinated at 80%, it's all going to be okay. But it wasn't in Israel, and it wasn't in other countries. Where they, Singapore being the latest one, they said we're 90% vaccinated and we still have more people in hospital than ever.
Yeah.
More people contracting this.
I did some research the other day. I just had a bit of a hunt around the globe at COVID cases and vaccination rates. These vaccines are a dud. They're not a dud. Let me rephrase that.
Yes. You better, or we're in trouble.
They reduce your chance of catching it. And if you do catch it, they reduce your chances of being in hospital. And if you do go to hospital, that reduces your chances of dying. Mm. That's it.
And that's it factual, doesn't stop. Isn't it?
That's factual, yes.
Okay. But it doesn't stop.
Is what the vaccine manufacturers say.
Mm.
And they make the stuff. So
are they to be trusted, though? I mean, I've heard that AstraZeneca, which I got a jab of last week, actually my first jab, with all the blood clot concerns.
Yep.
It's hard to say. Whereas Pfizer, as far as I understand, AstraZeneca is from Oxford University in the UK, and it's very trustworthy, and they're not out to make a dollar. But Pfizer, I've heard, are very much out to make a dollar. And so I kind of thought, even though maybe I'm taking a one in a million risk taking the Astra, I felt like I was doing a good thing because Pfizer are this nasty big corporation, whereas, don't sue me, Pfizer, but that's just my point of view. But AstraZeneca are from a university, Oxford University in the UK. And I kind of thought, that's okay. I have a more sense of belief in AstraZeneca, despite all the bad news about it.
And look, the evidence seems to suggest now that AstraZeneca lasts longer than Pfizer.
Ah.
It's efficacy.
Yeah, I know. I hate using that word. Yeah. Efficacy.
Its efficacy is longer than Pfizer. So when we get around to having booster shots, which for some reason our government hasn't even thought about yet.
Well, they didn't think about this is not a race, our Prime Minister said.
Yeah, exactly. even though we're at the front of the queue. I don't know. Yeah. When we start getting the jabs, we're going to have, if you're on Pfizer, you're going to have more jabs more frequently than if you're on AstraZeneca.
Do you mind if I ask?
They're also looking now, combining them. So, they're saying maybe it's better to have Pfizer one shot and AstraZeneca the other shot or something, or Moderna.
They're mixing, they're doing a lot of tests on that in Britain, and our own medical authorities are looking into that. Could be an option.
Yeah. Absolutely. Look, give me everything. I'll just have one of everything.
You used to say that in the 90s when we were in nightclubs.
It's a mantra I live by.
Okay, so Adam, really seriously, do you think Christmas is going to happen? Because the politicians seem to think it is.
Look,
what are your
thoughts? Here's what I think should happen.
Okay, that's different.
We should be still in lockdown, I think, at Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly have some restrictions, if not a full lockdown. There certainly should be restrictions on gatherings and such at that point. I think what will happen is, if nationally we're at 80% vaccinated, then the pressure on our politicians will be so great that these restrictions, most of them will be lifted. Some of them will stay. I think masks will be a thing of the future for the future. I can't see us getting to a point where we won't need masks. But here's the thing. Every country that has reached a certain percentage of vaccination, whatever that percentage is, be it 50, 60, 70, 80, 90%, and then opened up or relieved restrictions, has seen an increase in cases, an increase in hospitalisation, and an increase in deaths.
Including Britain, so, of course.
Including Britain.
Israel, Singapore, now, we talked about that.
Israel, Singapore, America, Brazil, the Philippines, like Japan, everywhere that's opened up has had an increase with vaccinations, has had an increase in these things. So call me stupid, but I'm just assuming that when we reach a certain percentage of vaccination and our restrictions are lifted, we're going to see an increase in cases, an increase in hospitalizations, and an increase in death.
But can we live with this? I mean, this is the, well, we this have is the mantra at the moment. We have to live with this. Mm. Is Boris Johnson, the Prime Minister of Britain, is he actually, did he do the right thing with Freedom Day in July when, you know, it was, or late June, when it was the middle of summer because he said it's warm? Now he's very concerned because they're going into winter there.
Yeah.
Did he do the right thing by doing the Freedom Day thing and saying, basically, we have to live with this, get out and let's get this thing done, even if more and more people die and that kind of thing?
I think, in theory, what he did was an interesting, bold choice. Sure, and that is saying to people, look, if you're vaccinated, you know, it's safer, so we can relieve some restrictions. I think the way he did it was ridiculous. You know, this whole Freedom Day, it's like, no, you don't want to promote the hell out of this.
A terrible term.
Yeah, you just need to genuinely, you know, carefully, methodically, slowly lift restrictions. You don't tell everyone, hey, you know, at the clock of, you know, as the
12th
ticks over, you know, take your mask off and run outside and you know, do whatever you want.
Fun, yeah.
Yeah, with meet up with as many people as you want. I mean, it was insanity. What he, and, you know, cases are skyrocketing again. They're having, you know, they're averaging about 36,000 cases a day in England at
it's
the moment.
It's crazy, isn't it? Yeah.
I heard a politician here in Australia say yesterday that we have about 1,200 people in this country die each year from flu. And if we can get something similar to that, then, you know, that's something we can live with. I've got a slightly harsher stance on it than that. And, you know, the thing is, I think it's very dangerous to compare this to the flu because it's not the flu. It's very different to the flu. Yeah. Symptoms are similar, but it's much more
The Delta strain is much more contagious than the flu. That's important to note.
And it's much more deadly when you catch it than the flu is.
Yeah.
So,
as a matter of interest, did you ever get the flu shot?
Up until this started, I've had the flu shot every year.
Is that right? I've never got it done. I've got loads of friends who got it done, but I've never had the flu. So
yeah.
I just didn't get it done.
I had the flu once, and from then on, it's like I'm having the flu shot every year. Now, I haven't had it in the last 2 years because I've been in lockdown the whole time.
And also you've had the other shots.
Yeah.
So, like, how many shots can you get in your arm every year?
Exactly. I'm going to end up looking like a junkie.
Well, we did the nightclubs, but we were never junkies, Adam.
No.
Look, it's lovely to talk to you. I wish you well for trying to get to your new home in Queensland. And I imagine that'll be 2023?
Oh, 20-something.
And as a matter of interest, Airbnb, how are they treating you? Like, how you mentioned earlier on that it's quite comfortable. Airbnb seem to be doing pretty well out of this pandemic. Or is that true? I mean, I wonder.
Well, there's a lot of people are trapped away from their homes.
Yes, including our correspondent from Melbourne, Melissa Grima, who is currently stuck in Queensland.
Yes. She's in Queensland, where my home is, and I'm in Melbourne, where her home is.
It's bizarre. you couldn't pick it.
No. So, you know, it's, as far as I'm concerned, you know, Airbnb is brilliant. It's because our bookings are a month or longer, we get a significant discount, so it makes it affordable. It's great. And the place we're in, it's a professional Airbnb place. It's not somebody's home.
That's interesting.
So it's a company. A company owns a lot of apartments in and around Melbourne, and they're all Airbnb.
That's very interesting because I did not know that there was a difference, like someone just going, yeah, I'll just, you know, anyone can sleep on my couch kind of thing.
Yeah, which is how it started, Airbnb. And then it went to people saying, well, I'll rent you out my whole house, my whole premises. And then companies went,
yeah, let's do that.
We could make this a business.
Yes.
And it's a good business because they don't have to worry about, while a person's in it, that you never see them or hear them. They don't have to come and clean the place. They don't have to do anything unless you contact them with something wrong. Mm. And so it's your, you know, this apartment, it's, sure, it's got a bit of a feel like a hotel room to it. It's bigger than a hotel room, but it's not somebody's house. So we don't mind staying here a bit longer because we know we're not keeping somebody out of their home.
That's a very good point. And you're also working. You are working, but Ian, your partner, is not. Given your limited space, is that more difficult for you living together? Yes. Is that right? Yeah,
absolutely.
And why is that?
You know, I'm lucky in the sense that, well, my office is now that in the apartment we're in, it's a two bedroom apartment. It's got a combined lounge and dining area, a small kitchen, bathroom, and two bedrooms. My office is in the lounge room.
What about, but you've got two bedrooms and you're a couple, so it does beggar the question, why can't you use one of the bedrooms as an office, or is it just not
we've set Ian's computer and stuff up because he is doing some freelance work.
So
he's set up in one of the bedrooms. I'm in the dining room. But, you know, I'm relatively lucky because in my job I can sort of work my own hours. I'm not easily distracted by noise and stuff. So, you know, if the TV is on or music's playing or something or somebody's walking around the house, it doesn't bother me. I just keep working. It's a little more interesting when I'm doing this stuff, the radio stuff, because...
He's been very quiet, I must say.
Well, he's in the bedroom with the door closed,
and watching TV or something on the computer.
I have no idea.
You just don't know, Adam Devlin. If you've joined us for this hour, I've been talking with our Australian political correspondent Adam Devlin in St Kilda, in the city of Melbourne, in the state of Victoria. Adam, it's always lovely to talk to you. Thank you for joining me once again.
It's been fantastic, and I enjoyed the fact that you brought me a song I didn't know. That was great.
Yeah, that's a first. This is Bondi Tunes International. This is Real Radio.
Henry O'Donovan.